Monster Man, Special Episode, Monster Roulette 4. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Robert. If you'd like to be like Robert and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, in addition to choosing an episode, you'll also get access to all the episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is in the middle of a series about Haitian voodoo. So Robert, thank you very much for your support. And I hope that you enjoy the show. This episode became a roulette special, one in which I randomly generate a monster and come up with it as I go, kind of by a couple of steps. It started out when Robert was struggling to think of an idea for a special and instead asked that I ask my wife Allison, who Robert also knows, to choose. And when I did, she suggested that I do a monster roulette episode because she knows how much I enjoy doing them. Today, I have decided to do, this is another, like, a more visual monster roulette concept, but I think it'll work all right because I'm planning to just use it as inspiration to start designing the monster. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but I think it should be okay. I'm using something called the Monster Bash cards. These are generated every year, or at least they were for a number of years, by a group of different, like, miniatures gaming or crafting YouTube creators. And essentially, they're kind of like cut-ups. They're images of different parts of monsters or different locations or concepts. And you're supposed to print them out and make them into, like, a deck of cards and shuffle them. Now, the thing about the Monster Bash cards that makes them ideal for monster roulette purposes, and, you know, I don't have to print out 20 pages of cards and cut them up, is that there are exactly 100 cards in the deck, which means that I can just do them by rolling percentile dice. So we're going to see what we get on the cards, and then we're going to come up with a monster to go with them. Now, I have taken the liberty of rolling up 5 numbers to start with. And if it turns out that I can't make anything out of these, I reserve the right to add 1 or 2 or remove 1 or 2, because not everything will work together. But I think, you know, as always, I try to stick close to what I get at the beginning. And I'm going to go through the list now and see what those results come out as. So my first image is of a pair of huge eyes. At least I think that's what they're meant to be. And they have kind of like a cartoon staring eye quality. They have little sort of eyelashes at the top. They're very big and very exaggerated in their sort of oval shape. So they're very tall and thin. Maybe I'm just getting a cartoon concept. Yeah, they look like, who's the guy from SpongeBob that has his eyes on the top of his head? Is that Mr. I've never seen an episode of that show, but is that Mr. Krabs? I think he's a crab. Anyway, this is not important. The point is that they're quite cartoony, but that gives me the idea of, like, staring. Maybe this is a monster that has some kind of a gaze effect, if we're thinking about it. Okay, so big eyes, kind of cute eyes. I doubt the cuteness is going to stay a part of it. These cards are very thematically different from each other because, like, 20 different creators created 5 card sets to make up the 100 cards overall. These ones are from Frankie D. Crafter, who is a guy whose videos I watch from time to time. Okay, let's move on. This one's interesting. This page, they're a little more abstract. So, like, one of them is an acorn. One of them looks like, I think it's a steak. STEAK. These are by Berserker Works, another creator whose work I've enjoyed in the past. And this shows a helmet, chainmail hood or coif, and then a helmet with a face mask on the front of it. So kind of, I guess, kind of a 12th century sort of a look. Interesting. Now, the helmet and the big eyes, I don't know if they go together, but maybe the visor, the mask part of the helmet, has a hinge or like a sliding nasal bar at the top. It looks like a nasal bar, which doesn't really make sense in terms of the face mask being there. So I'm going to take it as kind of like a track that the mask slides up, the visor slides up. So maybe we have a monster that has a helmet on and it has like a deadly gaze attack and it can slide its mask out of the way to use the gaze attack. And the rest of the time it wears this visor that both, like, protects it, you know, gives it some more armor, but also protects other people around it from whatever's the deal with its eye. A bit like Balor the Fomorian, who had other Fomorians lift his eyelid when he wanted to use his deadly gaze. So our first element is the eyes. The second is the helmet with a mask on it. Now we're going to scoot down to the 12th set of cards. These were created by Will McDaniel, whose work I'm not familiar with. I'm not really sure what this is meant to look like. It's kind of, I don't know, it's some kind of head. It's got teeth. It almost seems like it's one body of a creature on the end of another. Maybe it's a glove puppet? I don't know. I'm gonna call that a maybe. This one is a little hard to interpret, which I don't think is a problem if you're using these as they're intended for visual inspiration. But it doesn't really suggest anything to me. It just suggests I'm not sure what to do with this. Then we go on to a set of images from Zambies, another creator I'm not familiar with. This card shows what looks like two bodies, like a chest. You can see the belly button, so it's like a torso, but they're either being joined together or they're splitting apart. Now, I think that we're supposed to understand this as splitting apart. The flesh kind of looks like it's being pulled taut, like this is a monster that has the capability to divide its body in two. I might keep the idea of a division, or we might connect it to the previous one, and maybe it has that like weird head, but it can separate it somehow. So we've got the eyes, we've got the helmet, we've got the idea of a body's dividing or combining. And for the last of five that I rolled at the beginning, we've got what looks like a bunch of cables. These were created by Eric's Hobby Workshop. Eric is a miniatures YouTuber whose work I really like. He's very thoughtful about his appreciation of things, which makes me happy. Like, he spends a lot of time thinking about why particular ideas are effective. And then also he makes things that are, I don't know, I would say, you know, in some ways we have similar aesthetic preferences, or at least that they overlap. And so he's got a lot of kind of mechanical things in his. And so here we have like a bunch of cables. So the cables idea seems to connect to like the division idea. So what if the cables represent sort of a connection, a way that information or whatever is shared? What if it all goes back to the eyes? So what if we're dealing with a monster that can extend parts of its body? What if I interpret that sort of hand glove puppet as just like, oh, well, the hand is a creature. Okay, so we're doing a kind of exquisite corpse game. I mean, essentially that's what we're doing. And we've done exquisite corpses on this show before. Indeed, I want to say in an episode requested by Steen Struppian, the Patreon backer who also kicked off Monster Roulette. So therefore, it's sort of like it's a little bit too obvious maybe to have the gimmick of this monster be it's a bunch of separate pieces. But I sort of like that idea. What if it can send off its hand separately? What if it can send off its eyes separately? And what if the helmet thing represents the idea that it sort of keeps itself together by wearing this armor? Right, so that the armored suit is all that's keeping its different bits stuck together, and it can just like send them off, but then it reabsorbs them. But it's not like, you know, it's not necessarily a perfect reabsorption. There's some kind of connection between it in the form of these cables and things. You know, maybe it's a creature that once upon a time had the ability to do this, but now it's sort of like technologically augmented. Or maybe it is a bunch of separate creatures that have been fused into a single creature through some technological means. Okay, I'm going to roll one more. That's going to give me... Okay, so this gives us like a long tongue. These have like some little notes on them that sort of tell us what they are. And this one says froggy tongue. These are from Dale Kingsmill, who I'm not familiar with that creator's work. Okay, so again, what if the froggy tongue is a bit like the cable? Oh, okay, so what if the creature can actually attach other parts to it? So we have the eyes, which it can remove from its head and send around. We have the hand, which it can detach from its body. But also, what if it could remove the body parts from something else and attach them to it? And so therefore, no two of them would really be the same. Again, I know this is just kind of suggested by the idea of the cards, but it would be a little bit like, I don't want to give too much away. If you play in my D&D game, skip ahead, you know, 30 seconds to a minute. All right. the Stertorous Recapitators from the Crypts of Indormancy, who, like, cut off people's heads and stick them on their own bodies. But here I think it might be more like the creature can absorb other creatures' powers. And you could do this by, you know, oh, we found, like, a dead basilisk. Well, now we know that the creature has taken some basilisk eyes, and now it has the ability to turn people to stone. Or the creature has taken a dragon's lungs, so now we know it can breathe fire. And you can have the part missing corpses of these other creatures scattered around your dungeon to give a sense of what's been lost. Indeed, some of them could still be alive. So you could have that thing where the party sees a basilisk coming toward them and they freak out, but then they don't turn to stone, and it turns out that this monster has removed the basilisk's eyes. How it does that without itself being turned to stone, I don't know. Well, actually, sure I do, because it would just have to fight the creature by removing its own eyes. So its eyes are somewhere else, and then it's going in and just fighting the basilisk blind, but at least it doesn't have to worry about being turned to stone because it can't see the creature. All right, I think there's something to that. Now, where do they come from? I already went to the well of being created in a lab, so I don't think we're going to do that. I think that these are smaller creatures that have essentially created this kind of colony form of life. A bit like the Seafull, except that the Seafull is about hive-mindedness and like the way in which swarms or like flocks of animals behave as though they were controlled by a single intelligence. That's not what's going on here. We have a bunch of little weird critters that are combining to form some new creature, like a Devastator or whatever. Maybe there's some central being that essentially exists in a symbiotic relationship with all these different parts, and it's providing just the ability to add new adaptations. But I like the idea that if this creature is essentially artificial, then it might follow that it can't reproduce, right? It can't have children because it's not really an animal. It's a colony of all different animals. The way that it reproduces is by building more of itself and using some part of it as the core. Maybe it's a bit like a hermit crab in that they've sort of inhabited these suits of armor, but they didn't make them. They just found them. You know, they're weird creatures that like made their nests in these suits of armor down in the dungeon. You know, whether that's kind of gothic mansion, armored statues on display, or it's in an armory, or it's dead adventurers. Okay. So, but don't think we're animating objects here. The suit of armor is not animated. It's just a suit of armor. The creature is wearing it, and it's got this thread. Now, okay, so here's the question. Did they find the thread? Is the thread what started it all? Like a magic spool of thread that connects these different creatures together? Or is it the ability of the central creature to connect the others? I think it might be the ability of the central creature to connect the others, right? Because I think that would let us have the froggy tongue. You know, so maybe the froggy tongue doesn't come from the creature's head where the big eyes are. You know, maybe it's in the torso somewhere. Well, no, because we could do the visor part with the froggy tongue, right? Like it opens the visor, and so it's vulnerable there. When it does that to fire the froggy tongue, it's sort of giving you a shot at the brain, right? It's like a kind of Legend of Zelda weak point. Okay, so it does that, and then when the froggy tongue hits something, it secretes some chemical on it that makes it want to be part of the collective, right? So like your hand starts to animate a little bit and think, like, or starts to get prepared for being able to join the rest of this body. And after a while, it'll start to like wither off, or maybe it'll just start looking for ways to get cut off. The question is whether these creatures are evil. They just have a weird life cycle? Because if they just have a weird life cycle, I don't think we want to do the evil dead, evil hand bit. If they just have a weird life cycle, we might be around looking for, you know, the hand of the king's nephew who got lost in the dungeon, but it has the royal signet ring on it or something like that. And then we realize like it's been absorbed by some other creature. Yeah, so I think they're not evil. I think this is just they're very weird. And that could be because they're extraplanar, or it could be because they got their hands on this magic thread and it like changed their life cycle. That this magic ability let them add their different bits together. Now this does kind of, we're not doing the gaze weapon. Instead, the ability of the eyes is that they can be detached from the body and like put somewhere to spy. So you could be walking around the dungeon and you'll just find this eye there, maybe with the thread linking it back. I like the idea that it's more autonomous, though. You know, I think the thread might be more of a metaphor. I'm of two minds about it, because an actual thread would be fun. But then it's just like you find the thing and you follow the thread back. And then also, what does the froggy tongue have to do with it? Would it, like, it can't implant the thread. So maybe it's like a trail of mucus. That's horrible, but it's a little bit more, like, it makes a little bit more sense in terms of, I mean, sense. Like, mucus that animates things and attaches them to a central body. It doesn't make sense, you know, properly so-called, but you understand what I mean. It fits the theme. I think, yeah, okay. So they'll just be like, you might, you know, an eagle-eyed tracker might spot a trail of slime connecting the two creatures, connecting the eyes to the original thing. And presumably there's some kind of radius, right? Some distance where once they get beyond that point, the slime starts to dry out and it can no longer communicate with the main body. Maybe it can still try to get back to it. Yeah, maybe if it runs out of juice, it just starts to try and return to the main body. There could be some larger colonies of these creatures that are too big to fit into the suits of armor, so they're just kind of lying around in some room in the dungeon, all bristling with eyes and hands and intestines and so forth, and then sending out these armored scouts to patrol the dungeon and go bring the main mass more hands and things. So maybe the division is not only between the separate parts of each of the armored creatures, but between the armored creatures and their central mother being. And that would give us a big, horrific showdown with a monster that has a wide range of different powers, but doesn't have very much mobility, and then it would call in its minions slash children to defend itself when it found out that it was in danger. Okay, I think that's workable. And I think we can just consider this to be a colony monster, right? These are like colony scouts, and then the main thing is the colony parent, and maybe it's the source of the mucus. So maybe even the colony scouts can't really survive autonomously without going back and immersing themselves in the shared mucus pool after a certain length of time. Okay. So, big eyes, the helmet with the visor comes up, the sticky tongue shoots out, but that also allows you to see where the kind of, you know, the ganglion or whatever, you know, maybe it's a brain, maybe the central mass can only create one of these things for every brain that it gets, because it needs them to have some kind of autonomous whatever. So it has to, instead of just like ripping somebody's hand off or pulling out the basilisk's eyes, it has to put the brain of a sufficiently intelligent creature into the mucus pool, because the thing needs to be able to function more or less independently while it's on its own. I'd just like to stress that I am saying it needs to like rip out a creature's brain and put it in the mucus pool. I am an adult. I am 44 years old. I have a PhD. This is where my life has led me. And honestly, I'm pretty comfortable with that. All right, so it's a big blob of parts, and yeah, maybe the creatures have a bit of a shopping list, right? Like, maybe they're trying to work their way up to getting some parts big enough to make the colony parent autonomous. They'd need, like, a dragon's wings or something to move it out of the mucus pool location and set their sights on absorbing the whole world. So they can't get anywhere until they get, you know, all eight legs from a giant spider to build a big, hideous trough of a body to decant their grotesque parent into, or something like that, you know. And they're trying to get as many colony scouts as they can to go and try to find that. Maybe colony scouts even emerge from the dungeon and into the world above, and then you go down into the dungeon, you know, where did this armor weirdo come from? And then you find all the, like, individual hands scuttling around, and like lesser colony creatures oozing along the floor, leaving trails of mucus behind them, and so forth. And then finally, it's a showdown against the colony parent, which you need to prevent from spreading. And of course, maybe some crackpot magician wants to study the mucus in order to learn how to get basilisk eyes. That's always possible too. All right, I think that's something. Colony scouts, colony parent, me saying mucus more times than I'm really comfortable with. So Robert, thank you very much, as always, for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed the show. Everyone else, if you'd like to be like Robert and get your own special episode, remember that all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we're going to be taking a look. Well, actually, it all depends. So for Patreon subscribers at the $2 and higher level, you'll be getting an all-new episode of Patron Deities in the middle of the week. Then, at the end of the week, everyone will get an episode of Monster Man, which is about the monsters, or people, who work for other monsters. We're going to talk about Renfields. And then, hopefully over the weekend, there's going to be a bonus episode, my usual monthly bonus episode wrap-up, that's going to go out to my Patreon backers at all levels. So there's a lot of episodes to look forward to this week, right here, on Monster Man. A show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@Dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.